Are you recording at all, Josh? Is it recording now? So, like, is this going to be on the... Like, they can hear this. Yeah?
Right now? Even now?
Wow. See, modern technology is pretty cool, I guess.
Wow.
Okay, so earlier this week, I started listening to one of my favorite bands. They're kind of like this blackened doom metal, if you're into weird subculture music. Band that I got super into probably like right at the end of high school, just beginning of college. And anytime the weather starts to change and gets like colder and like snows and rains, like I always go back to this band just because they're very kind of like depressive music, and like it really fits the mood that's outside for me. And so I just picked their last album that they had up on vinyl, which is awesome for me because I've been looking for it for years, and they finally just repressed it, and so I managed to get that. I was sitting on my couch and I was listening to it, and they're just a very negative kind of sounding band. And they have this one lyric, and it just kind of stuck with me, and it stuck with me all week. The lyric is, "I see no evidence of God in the men from the West." And so I was sitting there and I was like, so why is that like sticking with me? And so I was like going through and like re-listening to the song, and it's this whole thing about how the singer is this like staunch atheist, and he goes, "I understand why you believe, and I can see your evidence for God, but I have none." And it goes more into how he starts. He's very critical about the church and Christians in general, because he doesn't see the evidence in how people are living their lives. And so that got me thinking. I was like, well, okay, like, why is that? Why are we seeing no evidence for God? Or at least, why is he not seeing that? And so it kind of took me on this journey again. And I do this journey every couple of years. And it's getting into the characteristics of God. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to, because it's me, we're going to start off in the Old Testament. And we're going to work our way back up to the New Testament. I do this specifically for Aaron Craner because I know how much he loves me in the Old Testament.
Ecclesiastes.
And keeping up with Aaron Craner, we'll get into a little bit of Lamentations as well. So we're just going to hit all the things that Aaron loves. So if you have your book, or your Bible, I should say, we're going to be in Exodus chapter 34. Chapter 34, and we're going to start off verses 1 through, let's go all the way through 7. I'll be reading out of the NIV, just because that's my preferred translation, and says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Chisel out two stone tablets like the first ones, and I will write on them the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. Be ready in the morning, and then come up on Mount Sinai. Present yourself to me there on top of the mountain. No one is to come with you or be seen anywhere on the mountain. Not even the flocks and herds may graze in front of the mountain.' So Moses chiseled out two stone tablets like the first ones and went up Mount Sinai early in the morning. As the Lord had commanded him, he carried the two stone tablets in his hands. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, 'The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sins of the parents to the third and fourth generation.'" So I was reading that, and I think that there's a lot of like really beauty in that, because it's God telling his characteristics to Moses. And this is one of the things, like, a lot of times we can look and we can go, okay, let's rationally look at this and let's see what God's doing, and we're going to find a characteristic from that. But in this situation, we have going, this is who I am. This is straight from the horse's mouth coming into this. And I think it's important to look at the context of this verse as well. So obviously this is an Exodus. This is great Exodus out of Egypt. The Israelites were all slaves in Egypt, and Moses came in and managed to free them with the help of God. And as they were coming out, they were wandering through the desert for 40 years because they kept complaining. This is when we see that God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. Originally, Moses went on to Mount Sinai, got the Ten Commandments, and as soon as he came back, he sees all the Israelites building this golden calf and worshiping some new god, and he's sitting there, and he's like, I literally left you for 5 seconds. Like, 5 seconds is all I did. And it really reminds me, one of my really, really close friends, he's a comedian, and his name's Sam Bowers. He used to have a sketch show back home, and he wrote one of my favorite sketches, and it's just him and his friend Chris, and they're sitting at a table, and they have a cake. And Sam comes up, and he's like, hey, I really need you to watch this cake. Like, don't let anything happen to this cake. I'm going to be gone for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Nothing can happen to this cake. It's really important. We need this cake. Just leave it here for 5 minutes. And Chris is going, yeah, no, no problem. It's just a cake. It's on the table. It's fine. 5 minutes. I'll make sure nothing happens. And Sam's just like, seriously, though, nothing. 5 minutes. And he goes, okay. And so Sam starts to walk away, and he gets to the door to leave. And all of a sudden, you hear Chris just go, yeah, Sam? And Sam turns around, and you see Chris standing on the table in the middle of the cake, and he goes, I stepped on the cake. And so for me, like, that's what I look at, and I see this whole verse, and I'm like, that's basically what happened. Like, Moses is like, hey, you just saw all these miracles. You saw all this famine. You saw the first Passover. You saw the Nile turn to blood, a bunch of frogs, boils, locusts, all this different stuff. And then we go into the desert, and you're still seeing miracles out there, and I leave you for 5 minutes, and you go, well, I guess I'm going to do everything but what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I think that that kind of sets up the situation here, because we have God talking to Moses going, hey, your people are going to screw up a lot, but this is who I am, and I am faithful. And I think I want to kind of break it down, and I'm going to be talking about the first thing, which is compassionate, because I believe we do have a very compassionate God. And it says that he's gracious, and he's slow to anger, and he's abounding in love and faithfulness. And I think that there's a lot in that. But the second verse is talking about that, like, he's a just God as well. Like, there will be injustices, and there will be punishment for the injustices. And I think that that goes hand in hand, because you have a compassionate God. And I think you can be a very compassionate person, but also you need to be able to have a strict form of justice and understand what that justice means. Just like we see Israel receive justice from Egypt with God, later on we will see that God will give us the justice that we need. So I'm going to be talking about compassion in regards to the characters of God, and then we can discuss how we can be more compassionate and what compassion looks like in our own lives. So I looked up what compassion means, just because I'm really big into how words are played out through the Bible. So in English, compassion just means sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering or misfortune of others. Now, the etymology of compassion is actually comes from the Hebrew word, which is rahim, and it is used in different contexts. So we see compassion being used as an adjective as well as a noun. So compassion is a physical thing that we have as well as something you use to describe something. And I think that's really important to look at, especially in the context of this. But the word rahim that we get actually comes from the Hebrew word for womb. So when we look at that, that means that compassion is something that is innate to us. It's something that we hold really close to us, and it's the center of a person. One of the things I look at between humans and animals is that humans have compassion, whereas animals have instinct. And compassion is something that is innate to us. We are knitted in the womb, and I believe that we are knitted with compassion, partially because that's a characteristic of God. And if we are made in God's image, it would make sense for us to share similar characteristics with that. But I think that one of the really important things about compassion and the fact that it does come from the word for womb is it invites us to remember how we are nurtured and how we are loved like a mother loves her newborn. And I think that God really continues to do that throughout the Bible, especially in the Old Testament for Israel. So if we look at just the isolated version of the Old Testament, we see that God hears the cries of Israel while they're in captivity. God comes in and he is compassionate for them, and he frees them from their bondage. And then he hears their cries in the wilderness, and he is compassionate for them because he wants to take care of them and provides them with manna from heaven, gives them the nutrients and the sources of life so they can continue to survive. And even when Israel turns their back, God is compassionate for them and forgives them and continues to love them. Because the fact of the matter is that God is providing for us, much like a mother provides the nutrients for their children. Skipping along, continuing in the Old Testament, we're going to be in Isaiah 49. And it says, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. So even though that Israel and humanity as a whole had constantly begun to turn their backs and were scattered, God still had compassion for them. Later on in Isaiah, we start to see the prophetic teachings of the Messiah and of Jesus. And it says that God will rescue them through his compassion by actually entering into the suffering of the world. So we see this prophetic word talking about how compassionate God is for us, that he actually comes into the world to express that compassion. And so I think that God was so compassionate that he wanted not only to save us, but also be with us, but he wanted to understand the struggle on an intimate level. I can look at somebody's issue and I can go, man, that really sucks. Like, I feel bad that they have to struggle with that. But I don't understand where they're coming from until I've been in a similar situation. And when I'm in that similar situation, that's when my heart starts to change for them. And I start to see more compassion because I go, hey, I get it. I've been there. Let's understand this. I understand where you're coming from, and I can tell you it gets better, and I can more accurately show compassion and be there for a person and give them that nurturing tendency that they need in that season of their life. And so I am a firm believer that Jesus is actually the human form of God's compassion. John verse 11, 33 through 35, I feel is a perfect example of that. As you guys are turning to that, I'm going to continue to read through it, highlight it, because this is a really cool part of the Bible. It's one of my favorite parts. It says, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in the spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. This is the shortest verse in the Bible. It's John 11, 35. It says, Jesus wept. And I looked at that because God comes in, and obviously he has the foresight. He understands what's going on, but he's there and his friend died, and he was compassionate enough to come into the suffering of other people and sit there with them and let them mourn. Continuing on within Matthew chapter 9, verses 20 through 22, we see Jesus encounters a woman and says, just then, a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. She said to herself, if I only touch his cloak, I will be healed. Jesus turned and saw her. Take heart, daughter, he said, your faith has healed you. And the woman was healed at that moment. That's another really cool story because I think that there's a lot of ramifications for that story, especially culturally at that time. You go back into Leviticus, it talks about how there are unclean and clean times. And in this, this woman was bleeding for 12 years. And so for 12 years, she was consistently unclean. And at that point in Jewish culture, through the Levitical laws, you were supposed to isolate yourself and be away from people because you were not worthy, you were unclean. But here, we see that Jesus had so much compassion for humanity that the compassion he had was greater than the dogmatic beliefs of the old covenant. And we consistently see Jesus doing that throughout the Bible. Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath, and it's a big deal because it's a Sabbath and you're supposed to rest. And he goes, yeah, but I saw somebody who was hurting and they needed help. Or you have Paul later on in the Bible talking about providing for those who are less fortunate. And that's coming out of an abundance because you go, hey, I have what I need right now. Maybe I can help this person. And so consistently we see Jesus being really compassionate, especially towards those people who everybody else looked at and didn't want to have anything to do with. We had tax collectors, we had prostitutes, we had rich people, poor people, everybody who was on the outskirts that didn't necessarily fit into what the picture-perfect thing of a Jew at that time was. Jesus said, hey, man, I've got a lot of compassion for you because I am sympathetic towards you and I see your value. And I think that that is so powerful. Which brings me back to a verse in the Old Testament for Lamentations, which is Lamentations 3, 22 through 24. It says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassion never fails. And in that, we're not seeing compassion being used as an adjective to describe God. We are seeing compassion being a gift, a physical thing that God has to present to us. And it's not something that we deserve, but it's so ingrained in the nature of who God is that because of that, we get to have relationship with him, we get to have forgiveness, and we get to have all the benefits of living in the kingdom of heaven, even when we mess up. So it says, for his compassion never fails. Fife, your alarm's going off. For his compassion never fails. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. And I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will want him. And so I think that Jesus Christ himself is actually the perfect evidence to support that nature of God. And like going back and like reading the other things, he talks about how God is faithful. And Lamentation goes back and it touches on that as well. And we see that Jesus is faithful to God and it encourages people to be faithful. But I think it's important that the first thing that God used to describe himself to Moses is compassion. And I think that further ties into Jesus when it says the greatest of these is love. Because I don't think you can love something unless you have compassion for something. Because love is the outpouring of compassion. And so going back and just listening to that song and hearing, I see no evidence of God in the men from the West, I go, okay, well, let's see where we're being compassionate. And for me, that's been extremely convicting because I have to sit here and live with the fact there are times where I have not been a compassionate person. And I go, well, that was a missed opportunity because when I'm compassionate, I show love. And when I show love, I'm not showing my love, I'm showing the love of God. And so I think that especially in these times, obviously we just had the elections. Some people are really excited about how the elections turned out and some people are really not excited about the elections and how they turned out. And other people are just like, I don't really care. The government sucks no matter what. And I think in these times we can sit here and go, well, how can I show compassion? And how can I show compassion to people who don't quite deserve it? I think in these past 4 years especially, we've seen a lot of division in the United States. And we've seen a lot of issues in the world as a whole. Obviously, we're in a global pandemic. And we see that businesses are closing down, people are losing jobs, not able to provide for themselves. Other people are starting to have more depression because we're under quarantine. And I get that, and I understand that. And I think in these times, it's really easy for us to become more hedonistic in a stance and go, well, I'm going to provide for me and take care of myself and only do what I need to do and just that. But I think at the same time, we need to go, okay, like, yeah, I think it's important to have our needs met, but we also need to kind of help meet the needs of others and be compassionate and have that towards other people. And I think with just the division in the United States alone, whether you're on the right or the left, or you're some type of centrist, anarchist, libertarian, socialist, whatever, I don't really care, because I want to see you and I want to have compassion for you. Republicans have beliefs that I agree with. Liberals have beliefs I agree with. Both sides have beliefs I don't agree with. At the end of the day, I can look at it and I can go, well, you're just people and I understand where you're coming from. Why? Because I've been there and I know what it's like. And so I think if we can just continue to focus on that, then it starts to change. And every little change that we have is going to slowly turn us back towards God. One of the things my mom used to say is, like, when you're starting off a project, like, look at this like in your walk with life. If you start off and you're doing everything correctly, you're going to go in a straight line. But if you start off and you barely turn to the right or you turn to the left, what happens after a long period of time? You go that way when you needed to go straight. So something as simple as just moving an inch to the left in the big picture takes you so far away. So if we can continue to try and course correct as we can at the beginning, it makes it easier in the long run. And I think that that in itself will have more of a lasting impact than most other things in the world. So for this week, I really want to challenge you guys just to look and go, where can I be more compassionate? And I don't think that compassion means that you're a pushover and you just agree with whatever people are saying, but it means you're just loving on people and you're understanding their hardships and you're seeing that. And like the dictionary says, it's you take pity or you take love or you look at where they're at and where they're struggling and go, cool, I'm going to have an outpouring of compassion for you. Rather than this being an adjective, somebody saying I'm a compassionate person, they will see the physical thing of compassion and treat it as a noun rather than something that you just do in passing. So that's all I've got for this week. So Josh, if you want to pause that, I'd love to open it for discussion. Feel free to discuss. If you don't discuss, it gets real awkward when you just kind of sit here and admire how attractive Aaron is. And it gets awkward for all of us. But yeah, what do you guys think? Where are some places where you feel like you're being compassionate or where you feel like you could have more compassion in your life?